Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's a new year and a new season in Washington. The Democrats have had it all. Now the Republicans will have the House. It's no small thing, and the GOP intends to make the most of it. Healthcare, spending, post-crash regulation, the EPA, all in the crosshairs. This hour, On Point, Republican plans for the 112th Congress. You can join the conversation. Are you ready for the Tea Party-powered GOP? For the redo, undo, rollback, and cut, will the Democrats hold their ground? And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And I should say to each and every one of our listeners out there, Happy New Year. May it be a good one. Joining me right now from Washington is Aaron Billings, deputy editor on Capitol Hill for Roll Call. Aaron, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you, and Happy New Year.
Glad to be here, and Happy New Year to you.
And from Washington, Major Garrett, congressional correspondent for the National Journal. Until August, he was chief White House correspondent for Fox News. He knows the conservative camp well. Major Garrett, Happy New Year and welcome.
Happy New Year, Tom. Thank you for having me.
So, what, you moved over in August, and we saw friendly parting words here from Robert Gibbs saying that you represent the fair and balanced model. Robert Gibbs, no less. President Obama's press secretary says, I've always thought Major was one of the smartest people in the briefing room, tough, and I'd say the slogan actually fit him. We'll put that in our pipe and smoke it and welcome you here today, Major. Thanks for being here.
Put it in your pipe and smoke it. That's just fun.
Okay, we'll do it. Okay, so here we go. The Democrats have had the whole ball game, and now the Republicans are back in it. We want to understand what the game plan is. And the very first thing out of the gate we're hearing a lot about over this weekend and today is the debt ceiling. Major, what's the plan there? We hear Jim DeMint here, Republican senator, very conservative, South Carolina, says this needs to be a big showdown. What's planned?
Well, Republicans know that raising the debt ceiling, which is a requirement by law to allow the Treasury Department to continue to accumulate debt to service the debt of the federal government, is a mandatory obligation of a majority party.
Mm-hmm.
John Boehner, in an interview with the New Yorker magazine, said this will be the House Republicans' first adult moment. Now, what he means by that is this is going to have to get done. Now, what's the means by which he's going to accomplish it? Well, he's going to have to require a lot of hand-holding and educating and persuasion. Because I can tell you, Tom, that in two orientation sessions that incoming House Republicans attended, one here in Washington,
yep,
sponsored by the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank, and mm-hmm, one at Harvard, Republicans who attended both were, A, very curious about this debt ceiling matter generically, and very skeptical about the need to raise it. They wanted to understand in ways that I think sort of confounded the people who were presenting the issue to them why this really mattered and mm-hmm, why it was so vital and why it was such a big deal. Well, that's the kind of skepticism and the lack of, let us say, global economic awareness, perhaps, that some of these House Republicans bring to this issue. So Boehner and his Republican leadership staff on the House side are going to have to work them through this. And I think what you're also going to see alongside this debate, and I predict it will not be the colossal showdown some in Washington now imagine it will
okay
be, but what you'll see is a very concerted effort side by side to cut spending and to begin the process of talking in very serious terms about reforming entitlement programs like Social Security and Medicare. Those won't happen along with the vote on the debt ceiling because they would face a very uncertain future in the Senate and would be problematic for a presidential signature, but they will happen coincidentally to the vote on the debt ceiling.
Aaron Billings, this is really interesting. I mean, here you've got a challenge to the president, to the country in a way. If you don't raise the debt ceiling, as Austin Goolsbee was saying, the president's economic advisor, things don't go on. On the other hand, you've got John Boehner right away saying, you know, this is the first adult moment for the incoming Republican majority. Is that a sign of a split in the Republican ranks already? Is he calling, I don't know, Tea Party, you know, activists who want to say no to raising that debt ceiling? Is he calling them childish, Aaron?
I don't know if he's calling them childish, but I think he is trying to bring them into reality. And as Major points out, I mean, look, everyone knows that this is something that has to get done. They did it a year ago. They're probably going to have to do it next year. And I think what Boehner was trying to tell these folks is, look, we understand that you ran on taxes and spending. We understand that you're coming here to try to get things done and get things done on, paring back spending and getting mm-hmm. this house in order. But this is a serious thing. And as we've heard from both Republicans and Democrats, not dealing with it would be catastrophic. Boehner knows this. Mitch McConnell, the Senate minority leader, knows this. And folks are going to have to get real. But I think, you know, to Major's point, this is going to have to there's going to be a trade off. They're going to have to give something to these incoming members to say, look, all right, we heard you. We also campaigned this cycle as well. We understand that that folks are tired of the size of government. They're tired of all the spending. We've got to do something in a real way to demonstrate that we are going to move in a direction of austerity. And so this isn't going to happen in a vacuum. There will be a broader debate here about where this country is going in terms of dollars and cents. But the debt ceiling needs to be dealt with. It needs to be dealt with probably, March? I mean, we're mm-hmm. edging very close to reaching the ceiling at this point.
14 plus trillion.
That's right. And so I think Boehner was just trying to tell these folks before they even get sworn in that reality is coming and we have to we may have to swallow a few things that we don't necessarily like.
Major Garrett, who's driving the boat here? It does raise the question of who's in charge. Is it the Tea Party activists who, many of them lost as well, but they sure made a lot of noise, had a lot of energy, and may have energized the Republican base overall coming into this election in the midterms and coming into this Congress. Is it the Tea Party gang or is it the mainline gang? Is there still a difference, Major?
There is a difference, but I would say it's more slight than might be imagined. And remember, in the House of Representatives, the leadership runs the schedule, the leadership runs the process, and the leadership schedules the timing and puts together the votes and puts together the majority. In the House of Representatives, unlike the Senate, mm-hmm. where a single senator can block things using filibusters or anonymous holds, the majority and its leadership hold all or nearly all the cards. There is tremendous energy at the Tea Party level in the rank and file of the Republican House majority. But John Boehner, Eric Cantor, Kevin McCarthy, the top three, mm-hmm. all understand that they have to achieve things, they have to keep things moving along, and this vote will be an early test of their ability to do that. Now, let me tell you some of the things that are going to precede this debt limit vote that John Boehner and Eric Cantor and Kevin McCarthy believe will take some of the pressure off.
Right
out of the gate. Before the president delivers his State of the Union address, the House of Representatives under Republican leadership will bring to the floor and pass a full-fledged piece of legislation to repeal all of the Obama Health Care Reform Act. All of it.
Top to bottom. Done.
If they passed it,
can they even pass it in the House?
They can and they will pass it in the House, and it will be done before the president delivers his State of the Union address. Mm-hmm. So that is going to set a very confrontational tone. I mean, just imagine the scenario. The president comes to the rostrum of the House to greet this new House majority, and he knows that they have already acted to disable completely his signal legislative accomplishment of his first 2 years, and for Democrats, the signal legislative accomplishment of one of them in the past 60 years.
Well, they voted to do it, but that won't be the same as
that will not
actually
be
have it be
action.
Done. I mean,
the Senate will lay and be ignored by the Senate Majority Leader, Harry Reid. He does not mm-hmm. want to bring that to issue to the floor, but Republicans will constantly badger him and say, look, you have this repeal thing. It's right in front of you. Why don't you bring it up? Why don't you debate it? Are you afraid of it?
Mm-hmm.
It will continue to keep this issue going. But that's a pressure valve mechanism. I talked to John Klein, who's the incoming chairman of the Education and Labor and Pensions Committee, which will have a part of the health care debate, and I asked him, I said, is this vote right out of the gate on repeal symbolic? He said, yes, it is. But it's an important step for us to tell the country the direction we intend to go on the issue of health care. That will be followed up by lots of hearings and evaluations of things that have already gone into effect under the health care law that Republicans believe aren't working. That will be one of the things they will do. They will also attack spending. This first week, John Boehner, as Speaker, will say we're going to cut the House committee budgets and member budgets by 5%. Mm-hmm. And then every week, House Republicans will bring some initiative to the floor to cut federal spending. It may be small, it may be largely symbolic, but these issues and these votes will be about pressure valves. So these very energized, rank-and-file, Tea Party-inspired House Republicans will have votes they can point to before this big debt ceiling vote comes along to say, you see, we're changing the way things are working here.
We're going to look at the trench warfare after these big symbolic votes and symbolic gestures, you know, how the things may actually play out when it comes into our regulations and all the rest. But just at that level, Aaron Billings, how do you see the White House and Democrats in Congress prepared to respond to this line-in-the-sand drawing by Republicans, you know, reject the whole health care reform package, go hammer and tongs at spending rather than at cutting spending rather than stimulus? What were the Democrats planning in response, Aaron?
Extremists.
That's the label they're going to use, you're saying?
I think that they're going to try to paint the Republicans as trying to go too far, too fast. You know, they're going to try to paint them as extreme. They tried to do this over the last cycle. They did not do it successfully. But now, you know, government is shared. Republicans own the House and Democrats own the White House and the Senate, obviously. But it's a divided government, and it's going to be easier for the blame to be shared. And so I think that you're going to hear Harry Reid and perhaps, you know, Barack Obama, and certainly Democrats in the House, because they have nothing to lose. They're going to point to Republicans as trying to go too far. And it's not just going to be on the health care repeal. It's not just going to be on, you know, whatever kind of spending cuts they promote. And certainly there will be Democrats that support some of these spending reductions. But it also come in the oversight and government reform process. We have Daryl Issa, the new chairman on the Republican side, who's going to launch a series of oversight hearings over there. So I think that's how it's going to play out.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about Republicans back on top in the House of Representatives and the GOP agenda for the 112th Congress. The theme is redo, roll back, cut, stop. We're going to hear a lot about that in the months ahead. Major Garrett is with us from the National Journal, congressional correspondent there, and Aaron Billings, deputy editor for Roll Call in Washington as well. Happy New Year. Let's all wake up and smell the coffee here. Here's John Boehner. This was even before, a month ago or so, with John Boehner talking with 60 Minutes on CBS about his general posture in the new Congress.
I am not going to compromise on my principles, nor am I going to compromise the will of the American people.
The will of the American people. And here's Michigan Republican and incoming chair of the Energy and Commerce Committee, Fred Upton, yesterday on Fox News Sunday, talking about Republican efforts to repeal, and they will put that legislation forward in the House before the State of the Union address, to repeal the health care reform bill.
That'll happen before the president's State of the Union address. We have 242 Republicans. There will be a significant number of Democrats, I think, that will join us.
Significant number of Democrats who will join us. Aaron Billings, there were Democrats who on the hustings last fall who were not talking much about health care reform. Do you think Republicans will now be alone on this, or Democrats closing ranks?
Well, I mean, certainly there aren't as many moderate Democrats left after the November 2nd election. So I think there will be, there'll be some. I think that's going to be the challenge for Nancy Pelosi, who will now be the minority leader, is to try to unify her caucus. You know, the minority party is only as strong as its unity. And she knows that. She's been minority leader before. She's going to reprise that role. And so that's going to be a big test for her, whether or not she can convince her members to stick together and say, look, you may not like this health care law, or there may be pieces of it you don't like, but we need to stick together as a minority party so we can be the loyal opposition. It's something that John Boehner did very well when he was minority leader. It's something that Mitch McConnell has done very well in the Senate. And so to be successful, she's going to have to try to corral her members. But on the health care repeal, just generally, we spoke earlier about this being symbolic versus substantive. And I think from everything I've gathered from talking to Republicans on Capitol Hill, I mean, this is they recognize that a big part of this fight is symbolic, and it largely is symbolic. But they're trying to build a case for 2012. I mean, a lot of this is about trying to win the Senate in 2012 and trying to win the White House in 2012. We're very quickly going to get back into campaign mode. I think we probably have about 6 months where Obama and the Republicans might be able to work together in a real way. And then we get totally into campaign mode. But, you know, as one Senate staffer said to me, look, this is a death by a thousand cuts. We're going to try to attack this health care law on all fronts, and it's going to be largely a symbolic fight. But what we're hoping is that in 2012, we can say to the American people, look, we did everything we could to try to untangle this and get rid of it. But now you got to give us the whole enchilada. Now you got to give us the Senate and the White House so we can really get rid of it.
I want to talk about what that Thousand Cuts campaign looks like on health care and elsewhere. But if I may, I want to bring in a big Republican voice for just a moment here. Arthur Brooks joins us. He's president of the American Enterprise Institute, author of The Battle, How the Fight Between Free Enterprise and Big Government Will Shape America's Future. Arthur Brooks, thanks very much for being here. Welcome.
Hi, Tom.
So we've got big problems in this country, pretty imminent problems. If we get into battling over 2012 already right away, as Aaron says, are we going to miss the chance? You know, if it's all about posturing for the next campaign, do we miss the chance to work on what's in front of us right now, Arthur?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I agree with everything I just heard. The idea of going immediately into campaign mode is a huge missed opportunity to do what a lot of Republicans got elected to do, at least in the House, which was to take on the deficit. You know, you found that in exit polls coming out of the November 2nd election, a huge number of people, 57% of people said that reducing spending or cutting taxes was the number one priority. And so posturing for the next election simply is not going to get the job done. People find that really unsatisfactory very quickly. I mean, I think that a lot of the Republican leaders and the Democratic leaders, to a certain extent, understand that. And we will get some substantive work going.
All right. So take on the deficit. How do you do that? What does that mean? And how do you do that without sending the economy back into the ditch?
Well, one of the things that a lot of economists are saying these days is looking at evidence that suggests that the stimulus didn't do anything like it was supposed to do.
Well, some say that, and others say it saved our bacon.
Yeah, some say that. But I think it's pretty compelling that a lot of Americans are more on the side of, you know, cutting deficits and cutting spending actually will do a lot more in the long run for the American economy. And that's actually the biggest message that we got from the midterm election, as far as I'm concerned. And we've actually done work here at AEI on that, and we've been advising both sides. We're not contrary to how you introduced this, we're not a Republican outfit. We're a free enterprise outfit. And so we've been looking at what's happened over the past 40 years or so to the 20 or so countries with really huge deficit crises, and how they got out of them, and which countries actually were not successful. And one of the things that we find is that those that actually tried to lower costs through government spending as opposed to raising revenues through tax increases were much more successful in solving their fiscal problems among the countries that tried this.
That may be over the long term, but is there not a risk of sending us back into big economic problems if that stuff gets cut back right away? How does that work? And do Republicans have the power to really make that change with just the House in their control?
Well, that's the big question, and it's almost certainly the answer to that is no. But the House has to do certain things that they know that the Senate will go along with, and the President, who's looking more and more centrist, at least these days, might go along with as well, and then to do things that are expressive and that suggest what they would do in the coming era. Now, there's really no reason to think that if the government were to start cutting back deficits and canceling out some of the stimulus spending that was shown to be especially ineffective, that would send the American economy into a tailspin. I mean, that's the kind of argument that politicians always make, because politicians are elected to spend money and do stuff. When a politician is saying we're going to do less, we're going to spend less money, that's often a very difficult case to make, and in fact they will make exactly the opposite argument, but we have to keep our head about us here as far as I'm concerned, because that's exactly what the message of the last election was.
Major Garrett, the headline on your recent piece about the roadmap for the Republicans watching here is guerrilla war over government. I guess this is in line not just with cutting spending, but cutting government's power and presence in general. What's the shape of that guerrilla war over government? If it's not just the big symbolic votes, when you get down in the trenches, what might that look like in the coming months, Major?
Well, let's first address this idea of a symbolic vote to repeal health care. That's the first step, and it is symbolic. Mm-hmm. But what Republicans will do on health care after that will not be symbolic. They will take a very close look at elements of the health care law already put into place and those scheduled to be put into place, and either try to stop those that have yet to take place or fence off those that have already happened and either drain the funding for them or criticize them to such a degree that the administration finds it necessary to change them in some way. Let me give you a classic example. 1099 forms, you may have heard of them. Your audience may have heard of them. This is a transaction that a fee that will be applied in the healthcare law, $600 and above. You have to send a separate form to the IRS if you're a small business about this transaction you've made with a subcontractor or freelancer.
Somebody working for you, yeah.
Right. That's to capture untaxed revenue historically missed because these have often been cash transactions. There is a policy argument for it, but it is drawn bipartisan opprobrium.
Too much red Republicans tape has been the big complaint.
Mm-hmm. Right. The president's willing to get rid of that. Now, why was it not gotten rid of in the lame duck session? Because Republicans said to themselves strategically, no, 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 we're not going to let the president get rid of this thing he put in his own law and get a freebie without having a very substantive argument with us about other things we think in this health care law, but he doesn't yet think we need to be repealed.
Does health care reform add up without that money coming in from small business? And what about bigger things? Will they go after the mandate as well that Americans, you know, must have health care, the thing the court ruled on recently in Virginia, ruled against? Will the GOP
will definitely go after the mandate. They will definitely go after the mandate. And that's the biggest issue of all. And the White House said so in my piece and will say in much more direct and dramatic ways going forward, if you take away the individual mandate, you take away the mechanism by which you guarantee removal of that filtering screen for pre-existing conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it's a private insurance model that we're working from, and this health care law, by and large, keeps a private insurance market going, if the private insurers don't have the reliability of the customers provided by the individual mandate, they cannot and will not eliminate that screen for pre-existing conditions for basic cost and profitability reasons. So the White House will say, if you want to take away the mandate, then you're taking away the screen for pre-existing conditions. Do you really want to make that political choice? And the country will have, in ways that perhaps it didn't during the debate on the law in the first place, a very engaged debate about this central question, which really lies at the heart of what health care reform is or isn't.
Are we all in the pool on this together or not? Aaron Billings, do you see the capacity here with a Republican-led House for health care reform to be, dismantled or crippled, even if it won't be rejected wholesale because the Senate won't go with that? Can they cripple it?
They're certainly going to try. I mean, you know, they obviously major spoke to a couple of the issues. They're going to try to defund certain aspects of it. But there is a Democratic-controlled Senate and there is a Democrat in the White House. So this isn't going to be as easy as I think some Republicans have tried to portray it. I mean, they can't just defund it. I mean, the appropriations process is a bicameral process. It is not just a House process, even though appropriations bills do begin in the House and they will obviously have control at the outset. Again, to my earlier point, I think that they're going to try to attack it on all sides. On some things, they may be successful, but in terms of getting rid of it wholesale, we all know that that's not going to happen. That's how they're going to make the case for 2012. Give us everything, and we will get rid of it.
Arthur Brooks, how much do you think might be chipped away at, really chipped away at, in the health care reform package that was fought over for so long, with the leadership of the Obama administration for it? How much of that might be chipped away in this Congress?
Well, there're going to be opportunities to take little pieces off it, to nibble away at it, to defund certain things, but also to make the public opinion case such that if people do invest in the Republican brand a lot more in 2012, that they can go much further. It's the House prior to now was a lot more left wing than the Senate, and so therefore what the House can do is to pass legislation that will be more palatable to even a democratically controlled Senate, and who knows, maybe to President Obama, who's changed orientation a little bit. And then the parts that remain, if there continues to be a lot of voter energy against Obamacare, you know, a central unifying force, if it is in fact still the case in 2012, that will be a selling point.
Major, there's been talk from the White House that they see this as an opportunity to cement public support for health care reform. That was kind of a iffy proposition in the last campaign. Do you see that opportunity here now?
Iffy is generous, Tom.
Yes, yes.
Democrats would not talk about this issue who were seeking reelection. I mean, they generally ran away from it, which I think contributed to their losses, because I think it gave Democrats who were proud of it, or at least semi-supportive of it, a sense, well, look, if you're not going to care about it, why should I care about it? If you're not going to care about one of your big legislative accomplishments, why should I care about you? I mean, I think that tactical decision was a big mistake for Democrats because it undercut support from their base that thought, if you're going to be a Democrat, by God, sound like a Democrat, then I'll show up and vote for you. But set that aside because that's past. The White House clearly sees an opportunity to engage the public in ways that they candidly agree, told me on the record, we failed to do after the law was passed and signed, as it began to be implemented, and as it became somewhat of a topic in the midterm election cycle. So the White House is gearing up for a very aggressive effort to tell voters what they've done so far and what is yet to come. Now, let's just take one issue that is going to be a part of the debate going forward, something involving mini-meds. These are health insurance policies that currently exist provided by some big corporations like McDonald's that are low-premium, high-deductible policies that don't provide a lot of health insurance coverage, but they provide some. Now, the administration has already granted through Health and Human Services more than 200 waivers to keep these very policies in effect, policies that are going to be phased out over time under the health care reform law.
Okay.
Republicans look at these waivers and say, you see, you won't even let your own law take effect. You're giving all these companies waivers from your own policy. You're telling America this law doesn't work. The administration's counterargument is no. Exactly the opposite. Mm-hmm. We put the waiver process in because we knew in the interim, in the transition to phasing out these low-premium, high-deductible, semi-comprehensive coverage policies,
right,
that if we phase them out now, people would have no coverage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a transition. So this is the kind of debate we're going to have. Republicans are going to look at one set of facts and say, see, you hate your own law because you're granting waivers. And the administration will say, no, the waivers were there for a reason, to make sure we could transition to this better application of full coverage in 2014.
Well, that can sound like a reasonable middle way. Arthur Brooks, are Republicans going to be open to a reasonable middle way, or is their interest in sort of drawing a line and say, you know, it's black or white, and you have to choose, America?
Well, you'll find that different Republicans will tell you different things about whether or not it's a binary question at this point. My guess is that is virtually always the case in Washington, D.C. There will be some reasonable compromise, and then the question will be whether or not it remains a huge issue going forward. And it perfectly well might not be, because things have a tendency to dim as the years go by, particularly if some of the outcomes appear to be kind of palatable in the interim. So, I mean, I agree with everything Major just said. I think that the dynamics over the coming 12 months are going to indicate what we can expect.
Let's get to Alec in Hartford, Connecticut on right here. Hi, Alec. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks, Tom. I just wanted to ask Major Garrett what his thoughts are now that the Fox noise machine has done a great job of trashing Obama 24/7 for the last 2 years. Now that the Republicans are going to be in power in the House, what beyond crippling the federal government is the goal of the Republican Party? And, beyond crippling the federal government to the point where the corporate elites will again be free to run amok on Wall Street.
Alec, with your permission, let me put that to Arthur Brooks. We'll bring it to Major after a break, but I've just got Arthur for another minute. What beyond the crippling the federal government is the Republican agenda, asks our caller.
Well, I wouldn't exactly put it just like the caller put it, because I don't think that the Republicans or the conservatives really want to cripple our country. Crippling the government as opposed to making it more self-limiting and a little bit more efficient, or maybe a lot more efficient, is what they set out to do. The clear thing that they're going to try to do is expressively change the amount of revenues and costs, the streams that are coming into the government. They're basically going to be saying that what we spend our money on, how we stimulate our economy, the role of the government as opposed to the role of private enterprise, has a lot to say about what our values are going forward. Now, whether or not they can effectively do that, having just one house, remains to be seen.
Arthur Brooks, president of the American Enterprise Institute. We're going to pick it up from right there. We thank you for being with us. Listeners, we're looking at Republicans back on top in the House. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking on this first business day of the year 2011. about Republicans back on top in the House. They'll convene on Wednesday. We're looking at the GOP agenda for the 112th Congress. The theme looks like redo, rollback, cut, stop, and we're looking at what the Democrats plan to roll out in response as well. We're joined today by Aaron Billings, deputy editor for Roll Call in Washington, and Major Garrett, congressional correspondent for National Journal. Lots of response online. Jeff says the Republican agenda, it's raised to the bottom, pure and simple, unless you're in the top 10% of the wealth in the nation. But here's another, says quit living in denial, across the board spending cuts of at least 10%, and start downsizing various departments in the federal government. Major, I threw that last question to Arthur because we had to let him go, but you came out of Fox News last August with respect from the Democratic White House. Nevertheless, Fox has been a very potent player. What do you expect? I don't know if you have a no-comment agreement with Fox, but what do you expect now that Republicans are in control in the House? What do you expect from Fox News and its coverage?
Well, Tom, when I worked for Fox, I didn't comment at other media outlets. And now that I don't work for Fox, I'm not going to comment about Fox or any other media outlets. I work for National Journal, and my job is to cover Congress and national politics. So I'll confine my comments to that. But let me pick up where Alex's question is. He talked about crippling the federal government. Mm-hmm. Look, Republicans have pledged to cut $100 billion this year in discretionary domestic spending that does not affect Veterans Affairs or the military.
Right.
Now, that is a substantial chunk of money. When Republicans came in 1995, they also pledged to cut spending. They cut $16.7 billion in 1995. Inflation adjusted, that's still not anywhere close to $100 billion. Mm-hmm. And they had a very devilish time doing it. It was much harder than they thought it would be to cut even that small amount from the previous budgets under President Clinton. $100 billion will require a lot of cuts to existing government programs that did receive boost in the stimulus and did receive boosts in the appropriations bills passed and signed under Democratic leadership and with President Obama in the White House. That is going to put them in a politically perilous situation, because if you cut some of these programs, people are going to feel the effects. And let me give you another.
$100 billion, I read that something like a quarter of discretionary spending after the exemptions you described.
It could be as much as a quarter. Now, you can apportion it differently. Some could be spared that quarter. Mm-hmm. It could be 5% or 7%. Yep. But if it is, it has to be 38 or 40% someplace else.
That's a lot.
That's a big problem. Now, let me also talk to you about something that is going to affect the Republican leadership as it relates to states.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest benefit, I believe, that came from the Recovery Act or the stimulus was helping states deal with their massive in-state budget deficits. Well, that money is basically gone. And all the states in this country, 46 of them, are going to face budget deficits in this coming fiscal year of at least $130 billion cumulatively, possibly more. And they've already looked forward, and they're going to have $140 billion in deficits the next fiscal year. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about accumulated deficits of almost $300 billion at the state level. Well, a lot of Republicans won governorships in this midterm election.
Yep.
And those Republican governors are going to have to deal with the real-world consequences of making deep budget cuts after two consecutive years of very deep budget cuts. I guarantee you, Republican governors will come to Washington and beg Republicans in the House to help bail them out, and that is going to be an enormous test of the Republican agenda and what it means to downsize government spending. Because if they don't help these Republican governors, the cuts to the state level will be deep and severe, and they could affect the overall economy and its performance going forward.
And yet, Aaron, so many Republicans won their seats when they won them on a cut spending platform. Now, it's going to hurt. So how does this play out? Do you think they'll hit that $100 billion? It's still a drop in the bucket in our overall deficit. But can the GOP hit the $100 billion in Washington? And what about around the country when those Republican governors now come saying, help me?
Can they? Sure. But, I mean, it's not going to be easy. I mean, you know, we keep having these conversations about the recent tax cut package. It's a lot easier to cut taxes than it is to cut spending. And it's always great to talk about cutting spending. And everybody, you know, we're hearing a lot about it, both on the Republican and the Democratic side right now. But when you get down to brass tacks and actually have to cut spending, it's not easy because everybody's got their pet projects. Everybody's got their priorities. I mean, do you want to take it from education? Well, probably not. Do you want to take it from, you know, seniors? Probably not. I mean, you know, that's when it gets really tough. So I don't know. I mean, if they can do it, my hat's off to them. I think it's going to be really tough. And I think, you know, the other thing is, again, let's not forget, we have a divided government. There are things that maybe Republicans could pass in the House that aren't going anywhere in the Senate. So they can say, well, look, we cut it out. You know, we did this in the House. We cut this here. We've actually passed bills in the House that, you know, equal $100 billion in cuts. But it's easy to do that when you know it isn't going anywhere in the Senate and you know that the president isn't going to agree to it. So is it actually going to get done? Probably not. Will they take enough votes in the House floor to try to slice that chunk from the budget? Well, possibly. But is it going to become reality in the next 2 years? No.
Let's get our listeners in here. Anne in Dayton, Virginia. Hi, Anne. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you. I just want to say I'm embarrassed by my own party. I think the Democratic Party has become a bunch of wimps. Without Nancy Pelosi, they are dead in the water.
Well, she's still there as minority leader. I mean, she won't be the speaker, that's for sure. But what do you mean by wimps?
No, we need her worse than ever. But she'll still be there as, I think, minority, is she not?
Yes, she will.
So Republicans are going to do what they've continued to do for the last year or two, and that is to do what they can do to bring Obama down, to keep him from being reelected. They are going to prevent funding to some of the important initiatives that are underway, like Wall Street reform, as well as health care reform. Which, by the way, is essentially a Republican program. If you go back and look at it 10 years ago or 20. So I don't see anything changing very quickly, except that we're going to get more bad-mouthing of each other and a lot of politicians behaving like 10-year-olds.
And let us pick it all up if we can. We'll come to Wall Street reform, but first on this issue, Mitch McConnell famously, you know, saying his job is to make sure there's no second term for President Obama. Major, you've written about how congressional oversight through committees on Capitol Hill is going to get very tough now. How might that weapon, if it's a weapon, be wielded in this Congress by the Republican House majority?
And I do have a bit of pride of authorship of Mitch McConnell's statement because he said it to me. It was in one of my first pieces here in the National Journal. And what he meant by that, and this picks up on Aaron's point, is neither John Boehner nor Mitch McConnell, unlike Bob Dole when Republicans took control of the House in 1995 and the Senate, want to be president. There are no complications for them and their presidential aspirations. So the oversight process will be used not just by Daryl Issa, who everyone is sort of getting to know a little bit as the committee chairman of oversight, but many other committee chairmen, Fred Upton at Energy and Commerce, Dave Camp at Ways and Means. Others will use the power of not necessarily always investigatory in the sense of issuing subpoenas, but oversight hearings to ask questions about what's happening, what's been put in place, and what's to come. For example, in financial regulatory reform, there are numerous regulatory actions that have yet to take place that the regulators are empowered to do but have yet to do. And Republicans are going to try to short-circuit that process first by asking questions, and then if they don't like the answers, fencing off the money. For example, in that law, there's supposed to be much greater regulation and scrutiny of derivatives trading,
right?
Over-the-counter derivatives trading.
Which were so important in the meltdown we saw in 08.
Right, and that's to be carried out by the Commodities Future Trading Commission. Provided it gets the budget. It needs to expand its staff by roughly 60%, according to Treasury officials I've talked to perform the duties outlined in the law. Well, to get that 60% budget, it has to go through where? The House Republicans, because they're going to have the purse strings over that and many other things in the regulatory apparatus of the federal government.
But can that look like a winner to Republican leadership to not regulate the very thing that was kind of the burning fuse that sent us, you know, kaboom?
We will find out. But Spencer Baucus, who is the incoming chairman of the Financial Services Committee, has told me on the record he is very skeptical of the need to regulate derivatives. Republicans believe Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were a much bigger part of the financial meltdown than derivatives. They believe derivatives are going to be traded no matter what. And if you don't have an international consortium of laws and rules about where they're traded and how they're scrutinized, if we do it only here, that will just move derivatives trades overseas, and the problem will not be solved. We'll just not get any money from it.
What about Elizabeth Warren and her consumer protection operation? Does that need funding to go ahead as well, or not?
Of course it does. But organization does. She does not. She's a White House employee. The White House shrewdly said, "Wait a minute, we'll make her the sort of internal White House czar." So her funding is carried by the White House budget, much more difficult to get to, but that needs to be a set up bureaucracy, which could also provide opportunities for Republicans to fence off spending if they wanted to. But again, to your central question, do you really want to have that fight and say, you know what, we don't think there should be consumer protections in the financial marketplace? Maybe the Republicans have an argument saying this isn't the right kind of it, we need something else. Democrats will be able to engage. And to Ann's point about Nancy Pelosi, let me give her some degree of optimism if I could.
Mm-hmm.
John Boehner, the incoming speaker, has promised to return something called regular order, which is a process by which legislation is written by committees, not by the central leadership of the House. That provides much more opportunity for amendments and much fuller debate at the subcommittee, committee, and the floor level. Well, that empowers the majority party, of course, but it also empowers the minority party, because when you're in the minority and you have full-fledged debate at all these different levels, you can really criticize what the majority party is doing. And that's what you do in the minority. When you're in the House, you criticize what the majority is doing. Nancy Pelosi is very skilled at that, and I believe she has devoted the last month to preparing her members for that kind of battle.
Aaron, what about on the EPA front? They've been handed a lot of power, starting with the first day of this year, to look at carbon emissions. When it comes to power plants and big industry, Republicans said they'll push back on that. How much can a Republican majority in the House do to carve that back?
Well, they may have a little, on the EPA front, they may have a little bit more of a stronger hand, because there are some Senate Democrats, Jay Rockefeller, Joe Manchin, the new senator from West Virginia, other moderates who also want to go after some of these new regulations that the EPA is putting in place. But I think that there's a broader point here as well, which is this, it's called the congressional review process. We're hearing Republicans talk more and more about trying to use that to go after some of these regulations that the administration has put in place and that they will put in place. But on the EPA front, I think on some of those environmental regulations, I think the Republicans might have some allies on the Senate Democratic side, particularly among those coal state moderates who, not necessarily moderates, but coal state members who are also unhappy with some of those regulations. But it'll be interesting to see how Republicans try to tackle those regulations from the House side.
Boy, this is really going to lay out the terms of the campaign season. Of course, there's real life in the interim and how we manage that. Winchester, Virginia, Jim is calling. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi. My comment is that the Democrats have had the power up until this last election.
Yep.
If everything was, so important and they thought that the Republicans were wrong, they should have passed the legislation that they wanted. They could have done it without any Republican votes. And what they've done is they have allowed the Republicans to block this stuff just by talking. They didn't have the guts to actually do it. So they let the Republicans talk, block a lot of this stuff without just doing anything, talking.
So you're looking over your shoulder and wishing more had been done. Of course, a bunch of what was done is going to be chipped at now. Jim, our time is short. I appreciate your call. One more. Westport, Massachusetts. Paul, you're on the air.
Yes. What I'm wondering is if there are going to be all these federal cuts. I mean, we've had so many contractors coming into the federal government, doing the job of the federal government. Those contracts are just going to end. They're not going to be funded, and that's going to be a heck of a lot of workers out there who are out of a job. And so I can see the unemployment rate is going to skyrocket even higher. It's going to be even more out of control.
If federal contracts are cut, well, what about unemployment, Major? I mean, Republicans have a philosophical commitment to cutting spending. They've been very upfront about it. We heard Arthur Brooks say they don't believe in stimulus. On the other hand, how's it work for them if the economy should stall out or not get the kind of much higher growth that needs to cut back on unemployment? Where's their interest lie here, Major?
Well, Republicans will argue, and I'm not sure it will be persuasive, but they will argue that because the government has grown and because the government has taken on more tasks than it ought to have, that's one of the reasons the economy has come out of this recession so slowly. If you compare it to previous recessions, our rate of growth coming out of it is much slower.
Mm-hmm,
right. Instead of a sharp V rising in economic growth, you've had a much more elongated U curve as far as growth is
concerned. Of course, Democrats say that's because the economy was hollowed out over many years.
That's right. Precisely. And that's an economic debate that will be batted back and forth. But Republicans will frame all of their early initiatives, at least for the first 6 months, as an effort to create jobs and argue that what the government has done has prevented job growth, and they're trying to remedy that by constraining government that will create job growth. I think the structural realities of the U.S. economy are that neither side really knows how to pick this lock.
Major, you covered the White House before you came to Congress. How do you see the Obama administration responding to what's coming from the Republican guerrilla war over government, as you describe it?
Aggressively. I mean, the president is not going to allow a wholesale dismantling of financial regulatory reform, of his push to regulate greenhouse gases, of health care reform, or of his stimulus. He simply, those are signal accomplishments of his and their directions he promised to take the country. And whatever antipathy you feel or hear from progressives / liberals about the White House, I think you will see a warming of that relationship as this fight is engaged, because they will see the White House and the president defending that which he's accomplished, and them seeing him more as a fighter and less as a conciliator.
Aaron, last word, just got half a minute here, but middle ground anywhere in this? Do you see some kind of, you know, more, I don't know, kumbaya, even just very self-interestedly in the months ahead?
I think there will be some. I think particularly in the first 6 months, as I said earlier. Look, I mean, Obama wants to put another cap on the tax cut package he negotiated with Mitch McConnell and the Republicans. He wants to show he can do it again. His job is on the line. He doesn't want to just show that he is a partisan. He wants to show that he actually can be post-partisan.
Well, it's going to be very interesting, high stakes, and we'll be right on top of it. Aaron Billings with Roll Call. Thanks again for joining us today, Aaron. Great to have you with us.
Thank you.
And Major Garrett at National Journal. Thank you so much, Major. Talk to you again.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Listeners, welcome back after the new year. It's great to have you. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.